call to order the April 27th, 2010 meeting of the Sussex County Council. First item is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker, have you got any changes?
Yes, I would like to recommend that we delete the executive session items.
That's a good idea.
Any council members have any additional changes? We'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
So moving.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Approval of the minutes in your packet were the April 20th minutes. Is there any additions or changes? Hearing none, I'll accept the minutes as approved. Reading correspondence, Mr. Baker. Or excuse me, Mr. Moore.
I have none, Mr. President.
Does any council member have correspondence? Next item is the administrator's report. Mr. Baker.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. The first item I have is a proclamation for Community Action Month. And with us today is Mr. LaCates, who is actually a member of the board for First State Community Action. And I'll go ahead and read the proclamation. Proclaiming the month of May as Community Action Month, whereas the community action agencies were created when the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 was signed into law, and whereas First State Community Action Agency has more than a 44-year history of promoting self-sufficiency for individuals and families with a limited income, whereas First State Community Action Agency has made an essential contribution to individuals and families in Sussex County and the state of Delaware by providing them with innovative and cost-effective programs, whereas welfare reform in Delaware has benefited from the state's partnership with First State Community Action Agency, and whereas individuals and families with a limited income continue to need opportunities to improve their lives and their living conditions, thus ensuring that all citizens are able to live in dignity, and whereas Delaware and the entire United States must continue to wage war on poverty by providing support and opportunities for all citizens in need of assistance. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Sussex County Council hereby proclaims the month of May as Community Action Month in Sussex County in recognition of First State Community Action Agency's hard work and dedication to the residents of Sussex County and the state of Delaware. So we...
Mr. LaCates?
Thank you, Bill.
Next item is Delaware Housing and Mortgage Programs. And a few weeks ago, Delaware State Housing Authority Director Anas Benati met with Mr. LaCates, Brandy Bennett, Gina Jennings, and myself here in Georgetown. And we at that meeting, we invited Director Anas Benati to come again and explain to the County Council and the residents of Sussex County the program that the state offers that benefits first-time homeowners. And this is a mortgage-type program that we weren't sure that many people in the county were aware of. And it is our understanding that a proportionately lower number of Sussex Countyans take advantage of this of these programs than in Kent and Newcastle. So we wanted to assist in making Sussex Countyans more aware of the programs, which would help more Sussex Countyans, enable more Sussex Countyans to purchase homes and help improve the real estate and construction industries. And with that, I'll introduce the housing director, Mr. Anas Benati. And he has a little presentation.
While this thing is sitting up, I want to just thank you for the opportunity to talk about DSHA, the services, and zoom in a little bit to the mortgage product. I apologize to the crowd for my back. My name is Anas Benati. I'm the director of the Delaware State Housing Authority. I have been with the agency for more than 7 years, different positions, and as director since my appointment by Governor Markell in January of 2009. Before I talk about the mortgage product, I thought it would be helpful to just talk a little bit about DSHA, some of the services that we offer, zoom in a little bit to talk about Sussex County, as especially the housing market in Sussex County, and then talk about some of the product that could help either stimulate homeownership, and also I'm going to take a few minutes to talk about some foreclosure prevention programs that we have. This is really an interactive or a two-way presentation. So if you have any questions, stop me on any specific slide, and I can talk more about it, answer any questions that you may have. There we go. So as I said, I will talk a little bit about DSHA, core services, talk about Sussex housing market, and then the homeownership products. DSHA is a cabinet-level agency within the executive department. We have 135 employees. We have offices in Dover and Wilmington. We also have 10 public housing sites. We are a public housing authority just for Kent and Sussex. Just an idea about our operational funding, $10 million. This really slides that helped me with the state legislator because, as you can see, we don't receive any funds from the state to operate our daily work. We are a self-sustained agency. All our state funding goes toward programs. We use our bond funding, federal funds, and other funds to operate the agency. For the size of the agency, our program funding is a decent chunk. We put just fiscal year 2009, about $235 million worth of program funding out there in different programs. 75% was raised through a bond program. We issue our tax-exempt bond. They are not part of the state tax-exempt bond. We have our own set-up authority to do that. 20% or so from federal fund and 7% from the state. This is for program, not for operations. Key programs, the first one is the First at Home Buyer Program, which referred to as the bond program. I will talk about that in detail. Also, we have Second Mortgage Assistance Program, helps with down payment and closing costs. We have foreclosure mitigation. We don't offer direct housing counseling, but we fund the 8 approved HUD-approved housing counselors in the states. Some of the challenges, as you may know, at least from our perspective, bond markets, we, as you guys do, we borrow money to lend it. So when we are borrowing from a bond market that's ill, we borrow at a high cost, so we cannot offer mortgages that are attractive. And that has been the case for the last 2 years until recently. With federal help, we were able to offer more attractive rates, which I will talk about. Federal subsidy of the mortgage. The federal government has been buying indirectly mortgages in form of mortgage-backed security. So when you have federal subsidy coming to buy those mortgages, the rates is decreasing, so our product is not as attractive as it used to be. So it's a challenge for us. It's good for the market, bad for us. Affordability gap, as you will see in one of the slides, we still see that an average income Delawarean across the three counties cannot afford to buy an average-priced house. And the writing criteria is still a challenge. We have seen very flexible criteria to approve folks all the way from 03 to 06, 07. Now we believe that things has gone far on the other direction, and people who have decent income can afford to buy a house are penalized because of what's happened in the crisis. Foreclosure is still an issue, and I'm going to show you some numbers. On the rental side, we operate the Housing Development Fund, which is a state fund. We are the issuing agency for tax credit. On annual basis, we create or preserve, rehab about 400 rental units across the state. As I said, we operate public housing and rental vouchers throughout Kent and Sussex. We also monitor and offer asset management to close to 10,000 rental units. These are privately owned, but they are tied to DSHA because of funding or federal assistance. On the rental side, we have weak tax credit market. The way the SHA operate the tax credits is we receive about $2 million, from the federal government on an annual basis. We offer those tax credits to developers. They sell them. Back in the good days, meaning all the way to 07, they will sell it close to a dollar for dollar on tax credit. Times 10, because it's 10 years, so the $2 million generate $20 million worth of equity that helps rehab multifamily deals and create multifamily deals. Well, now you are lucky to get 65 cents on the dollar because people are not making, companies are not making profit. They are not buying tax credits. So our $20 million has shrank to $12 or $13 million, meaning you need either more money or less units. Lack of permanent funding, banks are not lending still on the multifamily business. Subsidy is lagging from HUD, and we have an aging inventory of rental units. So now I'm going to zoom in a little bit to Sussex. Out of all those numbers, I think the key ones are really the one that shows that Sussex has about 22% of the population, 22% of the households. Sussex homeownership rate is about 76.6%, which is slightly higher than Delaware, 76.2, and much higher than the nation average, which is 67.8. This is the affordability gap that I was talking about, and if you can see for Sussex, and this can be subjective because we use some, as you can see, a lot of assumptions in the bottom. But if you see here, 100% median income in Sussex is about $58,600. They can qualify, if you put them through these assumptions, they can qualify for a $200,000 home or mortgage. The median price, according to the fourth quarter 2009, is $237,000. So there is a gap of $35,000. And basically what this is showing is that a median income can qualify for a house that's much lower than the median home price in the county. And this is not just Sussex. This is across all three counties. On the building permit, just to give you an idea, we track this on a monthly basis for all three counties. You can see really the financial crisis. This is not news to you. Right now we are at levels that are similar to what we have seen in the early 90s in terms of building permit issued. Foreclosure filings, the trend is there, and we don't think that 2010 going to be any better than 2009. It may be similar or slightly higher. As you can see, Sussex trend is similar to the state trend. We had a peak on quarter 3, 09, and then it seems like it's slowing down a little bit, slightly. This is sheriff sales. We start to track this data because the filings don't tell us all the picture. Some of the filings, most of the filings don't go to actual foreclosure, and you can see here the trend. So these are the programs I want to talk about. The first one is homeownership preservation. How can we sustain what we already have? First program that DSHA has is called the Delaware Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program. And this program is a $15,000 deferred loan for people who are facing foreclosure for reasons outside of their control. So you lose your job, you went through a divorce, you are sick, and because of medical bills, you are back to work, but you cannot catch up with the back mortgage. This is a great mortgage. It's a $15,000. It can go all the way down to third position. You don't have to pay a dime on this program until you sell or refinance the house. And we are assuming when you sell, you're going to sell because you have equity, and then you pay us back. So far, we allocated more than $2 million to this program. Funds available right now are $1.1 million, and the number of families, I think this is reversed, so we have less than 1.1, but number of families assisted is 186. And really why I'm here today is out of the 186 that we helped, only 11 were in Sussex County. So that's another program where I think we can do better in advertising it and reaching some of the homeowners right here in this county. The second one is fairly new one, and this is a result of work between DSHA and Health Social Services, and we were able to get some of the TANF stimulus funds and to offer a 5,000 grants. This is a grant. It's not a loan like the DMAP, but it's only 5,000 It doesn't have as many requirements as the DMAP. You only have to be 30 days late. You have to have kids because it's TANF. And you can qualify to $5,000 worth of assistance. There is no recorded mortgage, and there is no obligation to pay it back. We have allocated $280,000. We started with $1 million pot. We allocated $282,000, and these don't add up again. I think we have more than $400,000 available. Anyway, we helped 59 families. Again, only one in Sussex County. I think there is a role or room for improvement from DSHA perspective to advertise, and that's why I'm here. But any help we can get will be much appreciated.
Do you think an office in Sussex County would help?
it definitely would help. But we do, on both these programs, we rely on housing counselors.
I understand. So
we don't do direct intake. And we rely on First State, for example. We have the most active here, First State Community Action and NCALL. So we rely on these guys. And there is no magical answer.
But if you relied on them, it just seems these numbers you just showed us, 11 on that one program and now one in this program, if they're not promoting those programs either, those agencies that you work with.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we're trying from all sides. We're working with the agencies. I'm here. We are putting billboards out here. We are looking. I know for the minority, the Hispanic communication, the Hispanic population, we had a deal with like Stosa down here to do some advertising. So we are we're trying from different angles. Finally, get to what Dave wanted me to really talk about, which is the homeownership program. So this is a bond program. As I said, it was difficult for us to issue bonds, but the federal government agreed to buy 60% of our bonds at low rates, which gave us up to $250 million to put out there. As you can see, the rates are very attractive. So if you know somebody, even a cousin, a nephew, a neighbor who wants to buy a house, this is a good time. The rate if you buy an existing house is 4.75%.
That's very good.
30-year 0 points. This is not your 4.75% get in the door and I charge you a 3% fee. It's a 0% fee up front, and you get this rate. You still have your appraisal fees and all the regular things, but there is no origination fee or anything like that. If you are buying a new construction, and this is an initiative from the governor to stimulate the economy, is we set aside 10% of the funds, up to $25 million, for folks who are buying new construction, and the rate drops to 4.25%, 0.30-year fix. It doesn't have to be, I mean, a new construction for us is a new construction. It can be existing inventory or just in the process of being built. For us, it's the same, as long as it's new construction and you are the first homeowner to go to live there. So, again, the rates are very attractive. We still have money. This is another program where you don't have to deal with us. I know folks, when they hear the state, the government, you're going to delay the process, going to take too much time, a lot of paperwork. You don't even see us. You deal with our approved lender, so you deal with the Chase, you deal with the Bank of America, with the First Horizon, MetLife, and all that. They send us the file. We approve it. Our deadline is 72 hours. Once we approve it, we send them a letter saying that you can close this loan. We will buy it from you. So the homeowner does not even see us. Sometimes they get our loan, they don't even know it.
Are there income qualifications on this?
Yes. And I'm gonna go right there. I think it's the next one. So this is basically what I talked about. We have $250 million. The first allocation we're putting out is $85 million. We still have 64 of that. So far, we closed 92 loans and 26 that are existing and 26 loans that are new construction. This is another program that complements the other one. Is up to $10,000 closing down payment assistance. It's a 6%. This is another one that's deferred. If you choose to pay us back, that's fine. If not, resell the house or refinance and then pay this one back.
Back to that other first-time home buyer, how many in Sussex County have participated in it? Did you have those kind of stats?
Yeah, I have it for 09 and 010.
Okay,
it's coming out soon.
Good enough.
This is the purchase price limit and the income limit for Sussex. Many people, when they hear Delaware State Housing Authority, they automatically disqualify themselves. I make too much money to qualify, or my house is too high of a price to qualify. But if you're in Sussex, we can go up to $327,000 and still qualify for our program. You can, for a family, three or more, you can be making higher than $80,000 and still qualify. So that's what we want to put out there. Unfortunately, I cannot change our name because the housing authority needs to stay there, and I think that's what discourages some people. They think it's just public housing Section 8. Why the heck am I even going to call them? But the word we want to put out there is don't disqualify yourself. Work with a lender and see what could be done. This is really the question. And if I have to leave you with one chart or slide or message, is this. This is our production, 2009 and 2010. As you can see, we have made about $120 million worth of loans. Only 6.3% was in Sussex, 46 loans out of 729. As you know, Sussex has more than 20% population, and we only have 6.3% worth of loans. So, and that's the main reason why we talked about it, and I thought it would be a good idea to start here and then work with other folks. This is not the only thing we're doing. I mean, we're working with the Sussex realtors. We're working with lenders, the housing counselors. We're doing some advertising. And I'm here today. Hopefully we get some words out there due to this meeting and due to you guys talking to your community and your constituents. I think that's my last slide. Any questions?
What is the position of the lender who sells the mortgage to you? Is that correct?
Yes.
Do they take a percentage, or so that they have some incentive to? To work with you.
Yes, we pay them a fee. It's not charged to the homeowner. Mm-hmm. So the way it works is once you become an approved lender, and we have about 24 approved lenders right now, you basically just start taking the loans, send them to us for approval, and then once we buy it, we pay you a fee for the work, for the underwriting that you have done. And we take it on terms of servicing, so there is no servicing requirements. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Well, again, I want to thank you for this opportunity. Hopefully we can work together to get the word out. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You.
One thing we would like to do when Mr. Guy is back is work on a press release in coordination with the Housing Authority to try to make more people aware of these programs so we can take more Sussex Countyans can take advantage of it. Okay, the next item is a request for an extension of conditional use 1705 filed on behalf of the Commonwealth Group, and we have reviewed a request from the Commonwealth Group for a one-year extension of a conditional use approved on October 2nd, 2008. The Planning and Zoning Commission has previously approved the 2 one-year extensions, which carries forward until October 2nd, 2010, the Commission is only authorized to provide a maximum of 2 one-year extensions. The Commonwealth Group is requesting this extension, which would cover the period October 2nd, 2010 to October 2nd, 2011. This is for the King Farm property adjacent to the County Industrial Park. Typically, the Council has approved extensions of this nature in the past. Mr. Lank is here.
What kind of use is it?
It's for an industrial park, adjacent to ours.
Right.
Well, David, don't we usually ask for a reason for the extension? Or is it just because they can try to market
because
it?
Because the economy.
I mean, everybody's got that problem, but I'm just wondering if that's. I don't know.
I can ask them for more details if you'd like.
Well, I mean, we've had other people come in front of us, and they've cited, the problems they were facing. And one of them, I can remember, there was a death of a guy, and his wife and the family were squabbling, and there was in court. So, you know, there was some justification. I just think that it looks little weak on our part if somebody just asks for a request and we grant it. I think there needs to be a reason why we're given an extension. So I would prefer seeing some kind of rationale why we're doing it.
Is there any objection from council to allow the administrator to seek that? Mr. Moore, is there a problem with that?
No? I mean, don't you think that's...
Fine.
Yep. No, it makes sense.
Yeah, because theoretically...
What else have you got, Mr. Baker?
Yeah, they die.
And the next item is the administrator's report, and we have several items there. First is the Delaware Solid Waste Authority report. As per the attached letters from the Delaware Solid Waste Authority, a total of 61,070 pounds of material was collected for recycling at the West Complex parking lot during the months of January through March. Animal control activity reports. Attached are reports for January and February from Delaware Animal Care and Control, with whom we contract for dog control services. As noted on the attachments, this organization responded to 386 service calls during January and 274 calls during February 2010. A total of 26 court cases were handled in Sussex County. These are the first of the reports that we've gotten. Prescription drug card report. As per the attached report, a total of 1,087 prescriptions were filled using the Sussex County NACO prescription drug discount card during January through March 2010. The March average savings was 29.77%, with an average price savings of $21.59 per prescription. These cards are available free for anyone to use. Please contact Mr. Chip Guy for assistance at 854-5000. Sussex County Airport Advisory Committee will meet on Wednesday, April 28th at the County Emergency Operations Center at 7 p.m. And we have an attached agenda. And then finally, it is with great sadness that we inform you that Ms. Nina Johnson passed away on April 25th. Ms. Johnson worked for the Buildings and Grounds Department from March 11th, 1985 until her retirement on August 1st, 2008. She worked primarily in this building and will be missed by many county employees. We wish to express our condolences to Ms. Johnson's family. Thank you.
Anything for the county administrator? Ms. Susan Webb, Director of Accounting.
She was small. Thank you. Today, I'd like to talk about the recovery zone facility bonds. Just to backtrack a little bit, stimulus projects, funding, we've talked about that a lot lately. And one of the forms of the stimulus package that the federal government did was to make available funds for bonds to stimulate the economy with new constructions, hoping to spur some jobs. So the county, if you remember, we brought in the recovery zone map, and we designated recovery zone areas where these bonds could be used. We're trying to take advantage of as much as we can of the stimulus projects and funds that are available to us. These recovery zone facility bonds are traditional tax-exempt bonds which have lower interest rates because the interest is tax-exempt to the investment, to the investors for federal tax purposes. These recovery zone facility bonds can be used for private business for capital projects like buildings and equipment, and they have to be used in businesses in the recovery zones. Like I talked about earlier, in July of last year, Dave brought the recovery zone map in, and the council designated which areas of the county were recovery zone areas, and basically all of them except publicly owned lands. There are limits of what these bonds can't be used for, certain businesses that don't qualify. For instance, they call them sin businesses, like country clubs, racetracks, hot tubs, suntan facilities. The Treasury Department
suntanning is a sin now?
It's, yeah, you have to.
Country clubs are sin.
Yes.
Wait a minute, wait for
they're over and above your basic core, what keeps this country, They're the extras, fringes, I guess, according to the Treasury Department.
Disposable income is
probably.
Oh, so disposable income is now a sin in America. Okay. Yeah.
I guess we can't go to the country club for lunch this afternoon?
No, you cannot.
Unless you want to be a sinner.
The Treasury Department gives states, counties, and large cities a volume cap of how to allocate these bonds. for eligible projects, and ours is $24,967,000. And businesses must apply directly to Sussex County and make application to our Industrial Revenue Bond Committee. These are not obligations of the county. All we are doing is allowing them to use our volume cap, and then they must find their own financing for these bonds. The government's given them the tax-exempt interest, and that's the advantage of the bonds to certain projects, especially
federal.
On April 14th, the Industrial Revenue Bond Committee heard an application from Five Point Crossings, LLC, who would like to finance their project through a recovery zone facility bond offered by the county. The project is a retail center in Lewis, including a Walgreens and a developed retail pad site. In your packet, you received the minutes of that meeting, the detailed application, and a resolution that we'll discuss today. And today, Mr. Robert Wittig, representing Five Points LLC, will give a short presentation. And he's also here today with Mr. Rick Gesner and Mr. Derry Carmine from the Community Development Capital Projects. So if you'd like to speak, Mr. Wittig, and tell the council about your project in more detail.
Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
I'd like to start out by thanking the council for seeing us today. Commercial real estate developer, work throughout the entire state of Delaware, have a number of projects in Sussex County. This particular project is at the intersection of Savannah and Old Orchard Road. It's for the relocation of an existing 10,000 square foot Walgreens drugstore, Happy Harry's drugstore, as we all know it. We're going to move that drugstore across the street into a 14,000 foot facility. We've made application for recovery zone facility bonds in order to facilitate this project. As you can understand, in these difficult times, financing is difficult. However, with the advent of this program, we feel we can meet our obligations based on the credit of this tenant. As you know, the purpose of these recovery zone facility bonds are to preserve and create jobs, promote economic recovery. Well, I'll give you a brief overview. We'll create anywhere from 120 to 130 temporary construction jobs with this project. We'll push another $5-6 million into the economy. We will, by doing this relocation, create upwards of 15 to 16 new full-time positions, full-time and part-time positions in the Walgreens. That does not include the new retail or pad location next to it. We would like to start this project very shortly. We have in place construction financing. This is ultimately for permanent financing. We have a number of different banks interested in the bonds, which would ultimately place the permanent financing. It's a pretty straightforward application. I believe we've met all the requirements. We're in the facility bond zone. And if you all have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
There is one in this packet we were handed. It says, on one piece of paper, it says, please note that the applicant, which is Five Point Crossings, that's you guys, right?
Yes, sir.
Is a startup company with no financial history to support a balance sheet and or profit loss statement. However, it says a pro forma statement for the project has been prepared and is included in the application. Is there any reason we should be concerned about that note?
No, sir.
It's in our package here?
No, sir. As you can understand, we do projects of this nature. Each individual project has its own entity. The group that has been put together to do this is a very, very substantial group. We own quite a bit of real estate throughout Delaware, probably over in excess of 1 million square feet of space. We're the largest landlord for Happy Harry's in the state of Delaware. So no, you need not.
All right. It just had a whole
now,
page.
No, I'm sure that's a disclaimer. The entity was formed simply for this project, okay. Single purpose entity.
So if I understand it, that entity is going to own the land. You said land.
Yes, ma'am. Land and building, land and improvements.
Oh, and building. And
yes, ma'am.
Be leased to Walgreens? Okay, I understand. Okay.
It's a long-term lease, by the way. It should be in your packet. It's a 25-year lease mm-hmm. with 50 years in options.
All right.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Baker.
One of the conditions that the committee recommended is that the approval would be subject to the recovery zone allocation. Provided that by August 1st, the applicant must provide the county with evidence of a firm commitment from a bond purchaser. So that
so that cap
expire
allocation.
After
right.
August 1st, if that did not happen.
Our bond committee is Administrator Dave Baker, our counsel Everett Moore, our economic development director Julie Wheatley, and finance director Susan Webb. And this committee has recommended our approval. Mr. Vincent, vice president of council, attended the meeting. Is there anything you'd like to add, Mr. Vincent?
No, I thought it was a good presentation, and certainly it falls in the realm of what we can obligate this money for. And there was a time frame, which is a good thing, I think, that if it's not done by a certain time, that money goes away and someone else could apply for it. So I think it's a good thing we could do to help the economy, hopefully.
All right. Any other comments by council before I ask Ms. Webb possibly to read a motion?
I have a resolution. I did want to mention it has been determined by our bond attorney, Ballard Spahr, to be an eligible project, as they determine from their tax attorneys that they have and their bond attorneys. That's the first thing we get out of the way before we spend a lot of people's time and money, is that it is an eligible project. I do have the motions made by the committee, or I could go right to the resolution. The motions were in your minutes if you had read those. I didn't know
I
if you want to read
them. I think you can go right to the resolution.
Okay. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council authorize the issuance of up to $7.4 million recovery zone facility bonds for the project Five Points Crossing LLC Series 2010.
So move you.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the resolution read by Ms. Webb. Is there any discussion? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Diva?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes as well. I don't approve of the social engineering that seems to be coming down with some of these funds, or at least in the spirit of these new grant programs that the federal government is employing. But this county is going to take advantage of as much of this funding as possible to help our local economy. Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Webb.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also in your packet was our unaudited revenue and expense report for the 9 months ending March 31st, 2010. This gives us a glimpse of the year coming close to our fiscal year end, June 30, 2010. I'll start with the revenues. This lets us look at how our real estate sensitive revenues are coming along, how the economy's coming, how close we are to our budget, and how we're doing with our revenues coming in and our expenses. As you can see, just a little bit of an uptick of our real estate related revenue as far as the fire service fee, building permits, buildings inspections, realty transfer tax, and then if you go on down to recorder of deeds, all in that 4-2% over our budgeted projections. So it's kind of holding its own, not making great leaps, but we're happy to see that very close to our budget projections, which were reduced a lot from the 2009 budget. We've been looking at this all along, kind of seeing this uptick as the quarters go along. And getting down to the bottom, you'll see that we're just a little short of our budget as far as revenue is concerned, 0.91%, because of the sways of the up and down. A big one on the interest earnings, that's very, very off the mark there for interest. So that's why you'll see those sways up and down, bringing us just about at our budget for revenues. On the expense side, very tight. Mostly all are negatives, which is good, meaning have spent under our budget at this point as the budget's been prorated. The ones that are larger, we've analyzed. Many of the department ones that you'll see that have small increases, for instance, this is a good example, buildings and grounds. If you remember, we've had some retirements, and in the retirements, they get their what they call compensated absence, and that kind of throws the salaries because it's a lump sum. A few many of those aren't budgeted because we could never tell, you know, what the year's going to.
Is that in personnel expense?
Well, no, that goes right to the department expense.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What's this with personnel expense?
The large one on personnel expense is we have a $750,000 expense that we're expecting to take on our health insurance this year. We wanted to make sure we had this in the budget and there were no surprises. As we analyze health costs all along throughout the year and not wait to the very end of the fiscal year to see, it's a lot better to do it this way, and then you can prepare for it. And we anticipate it to be about $1 million possibly short in our health care costs. There's a variety of reasons. One of them is, as we had designed two different plans, we didn't have as much participation in the silver plan as we anticipated, so not moving those people off that way. But the good news, if you look at the bottom of the report, we're showing a small excess of revenues over expenditures of about a little over $100,000. Still holding our own in there this fiscal year. Overall expenses are 1.25% under the budget, so it's a good sign going into the end of the fiscal year as far as it's very tight to what our budget projections are.
Yeah, I do notice the sheriff's department, which is a double-edged sword, is bringing in more money by 14%, but of course that, I suppose, is because of the continued stress and the foreclosures.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He gets busier and busier all the time, unfortunately.
For a $34 million budget to date, to only be $100,000 one way or the other is pretty incredible and quite a testimony to the Budget Committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments for Ms. Webb on this?
Now, will we see maybe a change with the change of seasons with spring? Is there any more activity in the next report we get?
I thought it was in looking at the really transfer tax that had like upticks, but last week's was a little disappointed. So we still have those fluctuations.
All right.
I mean, but at least we have more fluctuations now to the good, and it's not constantly week after week after week
negative.
Bad.
All right.
So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hal Godwin.
Thank you. Very important.
Mr. President, members of council, I want to discuss briefly with you the pieces of legislation that I'm monitoring. When you get your hand out there. On the first page of this update, the first six bills were really introduced last year and haven't been very active this year. I think that's a good sign because most of this legislation was legislation that we weren't all that fond of. I want to point out to you the second bill on page one, House Bill 65, which was introduced in 2009 to increase Sussex County Council from a board of 5 members to 7. It had never been through committee, but it was always on, or I'm sorry, it had been through committee and sitting on the House ready list waiting for an active agenda to be placed for the House to consider it. It has been removed from the House ready list, which I believe is an indication that this bill is probably not one that the current legislature is anxious to work. So I think that's a good sign, because I know that we had strong feelings about what that would do to our budget if we had to increase the expense of operating the council. So that's one I want to point out to you. The last bill from last year, House Bill 132, was also a bill that we were concerned about because it would require all land use ordinances to be reviewed and approved by the State Planning Office prior to our adopting these ordinances. There has not been any action on that bill whatsoever since June 10th of 2009. So I don't think that bill is going to find much favor at this point. It just doesn't seem to be. Land use issues are really not on the forefront of this year's legislative session. The budget and the casino issues are predominating the attention of most legislators. On the front page, I'll start off with bills that have been introduced this year. House Bill 300 is the bill that we talked about that will increase the requirements under FOIA requiring us to give an answer to requesters within 10 days. It passed the House, and it's in executive committee over in the Senate, and it will be up for hearing tomorrow. I will be there to listen as the hearing takes place. The next bill on the second page, House Bill 308, has passed the House, has been assigned to a committee in the Senate, but there has not been a meeting scheduled for that one yet. That's a bill that we were hoping to see passed because it will give our administrator the authority to appoint constables to take care of the dog enforcement that we now have the responsibility of.
Does that mean only one constable or as many as we would need?
It would be up to Dave and you to decide how many constables we would assign to the duty of managing the dog licenses.
Well, all we're doing is license.
That means now I'll always get closer all the time.
Correct. Correct.
We're just doing licenses. That's
right.
What we're doing.
Well, I'll get to another issue because the state would like us to do more than just licensing. But, you know, of course, once now they've gotten the responsibility shifted to us, they're going to probably add more responsibilities if they can.
Spend some money if they're going to do that.
Does that 308 only address the appointment of the dog constable, or is that that full document that outlines all those regulations?
No. It just gives Dave the authority to appoint who in our staff would be the dog constable or constables. We've reviewed this one favorably before back in February, I believe. Okay. House Bill 311 is interesting in nature. It says this bill authorizes the state attorney general to enforce laws of manufactured homes and home communities. I thought that raised my eyebrows when I saw that one. That bill is currently in the House Manufactured Home Committee, and there will be a hearing tomorrow at 1 p.m., which I will attend that one. I want to see how that goes because it sounds like the folks that we've interacted with that live in manufactured home subdivisions, let me get my wording correct.
With leased ground.
Correct, on leased ground. Right. Are seeking attorney general law enforcement for some of the laws that pertain to them different than from fee simple owned properties. And that might relieve us of some of our responsibility. So I wanted to see how that bill plays forward. I really don't know yet, but I've attached the bill for you to take a look at. This one is, when I first saw the next one, Senate Bill 167, it got my attention. It says, exempts from taxation by local government, real property owned by Sussex County Habitat for Humanity, and it talks about the other two counties too. When it was explained to me after I read through it more carefully, all it does is it takes off the tax rolls properties owned by Sussex County Habitat for Humanity. I thought, holy mackerel, that's going to be a real dent in our tax income. It's really not, because once the home is built, Habitat transfers the property to the new owner. So we're only looking at the period of time that Habitat owns the property, which is from the time they buy it or have it given to them until they transfer it on to the person that will live in it. Once the person that's helped build it and will live in it, it will then become taxed property again. So they're really only talking about exempting it from our tax rolls for the period of time that the property is under construction. So it's a much smaller time period. And so, I believe it's designed to help Habitat promote their programs.
If they're slow builders, it could be 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it could be. Until it's transferred to a private owner. Then it would go back on the tax rolls. It already passed the House on the 20th of this month, and I have not yet seen where it is in the Senate. So it hasn't been assigned to a committee in the Senate yet, but I will keep a close eye on that one. House Bill 333 is a bill that we had introduced early in the session that will allow us to use the JP Court for enforcing sewer connections. We've been very much in support of this. As a matter of fact, to show that Sussex County is still setting the standards in Delaware, as our bill came to the House floor last week for consideration, Newcastle County wanted to jump on. They wanted to be part of the program because they recognized that this will make our enforcement process is more efficient. So there was an amendment to add Newcastle County on. The bill passed unanimously through the House, and it is now in the in a committee in the Senate, but I don't have a schedule yet for a meeting. But I will keep a close eye on that because we're hoping to get that one passed and signed into law before the end of this year. House Bill 352. This bill, I found, was actually introduced by our Clerk of the Peace, George Parrish. He worked on having this bill introduced. It deletes the antiquated code provisions requiring churches and religious organizations to obtain a permit from a commission that is comprised of the sheriff, county council president, clerk of the peace, to conduct camp meetings, to offer permits to conduct camp meetings and other outdoor religious meetings. We discussed this last week. Our zoning law covers this. So I believe that you folks instructed me not to work pro or con on this bill, let it go through the process. I have spoken to George Parrish about it, and I don't know why he didn't mention it to me, because I'm up there as often as sure. I am, but he felt he had control.
Well, Hal, when you say our zoning covers it, I mean, would you mean that, like, say, if somebody's in an MR district, could somebody just set up one of these things in an MR district or any of our districts? Where does our zoning...
We really don't have provisions at this point, but our zoning code would apply to this since it's a land use issue. But we don't... I'm not aware of provisions in our code that allows these meetings currently. So I don't really know what process these folks would go through, but it would be...
Well, I'm trying to find out if somebody calls up, somebody sets up, like I say, some kind of a religious, let's say an outdoor religious meeting, and it lasts, you know, month, 2 months, 3 months out in the field here somewhere. Do we have zoning that covers that?
I think as Mr. Lank noted, he's not here right now, but right. My understanding is that they have a 3-day permit process that would apply, and they apply to the Planning and Zoning Department for those particular activities,
right.
And then they are approved if Planning and Zoning feels it's appropriate for a 3-day.
But it says here it deletes the provision for a permit.
In the state code. I think what Mr. Bigger's explaining is that our Lawrence Lank.
You still have a 3-day limit.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm just saying. We need, you know.
Right. So Lawrence handles that internally, administratively.
Okay. Just
for a 3-day.
I want to make sure.
Okay. House Bill 370. This bill, I've included a synopsis for you because this bill also has been promoted by Clerk of the Peace George Parrish. And I'll read the synopsis to you. It says, the State Bureau of Vital Statistics discontinued the policy of registering clergy and ministers authorized to solemnize marriages more than a decade ago. Since that time, there has been no way of verifying the legitimacy or entitlement of persons solemnizing marriages under Delaware law. This bill reestablishes the registration of clergy and ministers and transfers the responsibility of overseeing registrations to the Clerk of the Peace for the respective counties. This bill would require any clergy person or minister wishing to solemnize marriages in this state to register with the Clerk of the Peace of the county they reside or where a marriage ceremony will be performed. Registration will assure couples planning to marry select an officiant who is lawfully authorized to solemnize marriages. The bill also establishes fees for clergy persons and ministers registered on an annual basis and for those desiring to officiate a specific ceremony on a specific date. The bill also imposes a civil penalty for any person who performs a marriage ceremony without being lawfully registered. This will also create there'll be a small fee. George explained that in Sussex County, it should generate over $12,500 annually to handle this. So,
why do we need this?
Well, we only need this because I guess the reason that this is needed is because the Clerk of the Peace wants to know who is performing marriage ceremonies, and it shouldn't just be anyone. It should excuse me.
Who said that he needs to know? I'm sorry. Is there
somebody
a law?
Needs to know.
Is there a law?
Well, it says in the beginning of the synopsis that the State Bureau of Vital Statistics discontinued the policy of registering clergy. So this would reestablish that.
Joan, maybe he doesn't like the competition.
No, I think you got to know if, you know, somebody could just set up the church of, you know, of a hallelujah and be, you know, doing these things, and they're not legitimate. So what my question is it a license or is it just registering? I mean, do you register and get a license, or do you go to, does the state issue the license?
Clerk of Peace issue a license, or is it just register? This would be a state act, and it would be managed by the three clerks of the peace.
But who issues a license?
I believe they do, the way this is worded.
State?
This bill reestablishes the registration of clergy and ministers and transfers the responsibility for overseeing registration to the clerks of the peace of the respective counties.
Well, I'm just saying, I think registering and getting a license are two different things. You've got a synopsis here. He says about requires license to perform marriages. Are they going to be required to have a license, or are they just going to be required to register? And is there any basic requirements established by anybody that who's
Mr. Baker,
what qualifications, or maybe Everett or state law? What's going on here?
George Parrish in the house?
Let me get a check. Yeah.
He'd be a good
one. Well, I don't know if George knows the legalese, but do you have anything you could share with us tonight?
There is certain requirements that someone has to comply with in order to perform a marriage ceremony. And it's my understanding part of the problem has been no one knows who those persons are because they've not been registering. And that the purpose of this law was to have them register so that they could see that when someone... when a marriage license is issued, that the person who performs the marriage ceremony is someone who is qualified to perform the service.
I would have assumed that a minister or a pastor had the right to marry people, but this just looks like a more government to me. More government.
I know that there are certain people in the state who think that they can marry people and don't have that authority. And I'm not clear on where that authority comes from, but there has been some confusion about who has the right to marry and who doesn't. I believe the only mayor in Delaware that can do it is the mayor of Wilmington, as an example. And there are other people, and there is some confusion. I spoke with George briefly yesterday about this, and the feeling I got from him was that this bill was brought forward by the three clerks of the peace to clarify who is performing the marriages. That's what I got. I was a little surprised that he hadn't apprised me of these two bills that he was working on when, in fact, he knows I'm up there frequently.
And to require a license and money.
Well, wait a minute. As I read it, I don't see the word license. I just see the word register.
That's
so
right.
So I think this thing, license means, is leading us astray.
I don't think that there's going to be any requirements.
Okay.
You're not going to have to...
It said licenses. I thought it
...have any qualifications other than... You wish to
in other words, somebody can go in there and just say, "I want to register to perform marriages."
When you get into the whole religious side of things, you can't start saying, "Well, this one you can, this one you can't." You know, if it's as we know, religious freedoms allow anyone through whatever process they want to be ordained an authority in their religion would then, I would suppose, be able to join this registry. I'm not sure about how that works.
The minister of the church of what's happening now? Was that?
Yeah, right.
George Wilson.
Right.
In other words, there are no requirements in the state of Delaware that says what are the minimal requirements of being an.
I wish I could
minister.
Answer that.
That's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
That's concerning who is authorized to conduct a marriage ceremony. What this bill, as I read it, is. Just asking those who are licensed are actually registered so the clerks of peace in each of the counties know who is the licensed person.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of what I thought it was.
It talks about fees being established. Does it define those fees?
It does.
George explained to me that the fees were going to create a positive cash flow. That's about all he gave me. He told me that this county and Kent County needed $12,500 to break even. And the upper county needed more than that.
For what?
For the cost of managing this.
Oh.
And I don't know where those costs. I didn't get a breakdown as to
staff time, paperwork, et cetera. I guess.
Okay.
I would imagine.
There's a cost of doing things.
While we're waiting on that.
I wouldn't necessarily take this discussion as an approval of that. I think we need more information. It seems like a lot of questions still.
Well, there is a hearing tomorrow. I intend to be there.
Approval of what? Not to have them register?
No, not to support the bill.
Right.
I'm curious about these fees. Is this just another money-making scheme?
I have no idea, sir. I'm not sure.
Are there cases that can be cited of people out there?
I think Joe's right on target.
I wanted to.
It's more government. It's more government.
I wanted to.
Sam Wilson agreed.
That's why I wanted to attend the hearing tomorrow, was to get this information.
I think it's important to know who's out there marrying people.
Right. I recently read an account where there was some concern in one of the counties concerning whether or not the clerk of peace knew who the persons performing the ceremonies were actually licensed and were able to conduct it, and that there had been no list kept for quite a few years, where in the past there had been a list so each of the clerks would know, and that it was my understanding that this was simply a registration only, and I was unaware of any concern of fees in order to register that.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to do that work.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's going to be dumped on the county, I mean, our employees will be doing that work. And anything we've done in the past, there's usually been a fee associated. So if you need a service of this county, you pay the fee. It's kind of a user's fee. So I think if, you know, again, we shouldn't be subsidizing. My tax dollar shouldn't be subsidizing registering these people. So there has to be a fee associated with it. Okay. What is the fee? That's the question, I guess.
Mr. Parrish is not there, but Annie's bringing down a copy of the bill.
Oh,
to that point, I guess we have staff already there. It's not as if we're going to have to hire another person to register. And you almost could do it online with a follow-up phone call.
It shouldn't be that often that it happens.
Right.
I mean, once the initial registration happens, where everybody in this county that's doing marriages gets registered, you're going to have one or two new registrants a year, I would think. I mean,
well, let me ask you this. Does the bill establish the fees, or does the county establish fees?
It's not clear. It's not clear in here. The wording I've got is not clear.
Okay,
that's
maybe the position you should take is that Sussex County, each of the counties should establish their own fees.
Right.
That should be part of the bill.
I have no objection to that.
Right. Then we'll have that debate another day. But to sit here and debate it now is crazy.
Can we revisit, are we done with this one? I'd like to revisit House Bill 311, Hal.
311? Sure. All I know about that is what I've given you. It has a hearing. Let me see. Yeah, there's a hearing on this tomorrow at 1 o'clock, which I intend to be there. I know that we have we have more manufactured homes in this county than the other two, so I'm very concerned about what they're doing. It sounded to me as though the folks who are organized, as we know they are very well organized, the folks that live in and work with the manufactured home communities have requested this in order to resolve certain legal issues. That's why they wanted to have the ability to get their laws and have their laws enforced by the Attorney General. But if they're our laws, that might be a problem.
I'm also thinking about, it says enforce laws of manufactured home communities. Who is this people that's making these laws? The laws of manufactured homes.
Well, there's certain laws that are promulgated by the state of Delaware concerning what has to go in the leases, for example, in manufactured home communities. And they were under the authority of the Attorney General's office. So I don't know if there's other laws that were promulgated that there's some question as to who does it. But I would certainly assume that this would no way mean our zoning ordinances, that it would strictly be those items that are subject to the state law. But again, we would need to see that.
The top half of the synopsis mentions a number of codes in the Delaware law. Of course, this would be dealing with Delaware law. It says, by way of this act, to extend there is no conflict with the provisions of this subchapter, the powers, remedies, and penalties provided for in Title VI, Chapter 25. Then it goes on to list a whole mirage of numbers that we'd have to look at them carefully in the code books to find out exactly what they're doing here. But it sounds to me like they're trying to establish some sort of authority with the Attorney General's office on laws that might be not always enforced there. Everett, was that,
right.
that what you
were saying? And the title they're referring to, when you look roughly two-thirds down the synopsis, is Title 25. Title 25 is that section of Delaware Code that addresses real property and also includes the manufactured housing portions of the ordinance. So that would indicate that they're talking about those that particular law concerning anything that has to do with Title 25 as it relates to manufactured housing communities, which addresses the leases, the language have to be in, that has to be in the leases, those type of things.
Not our area
Correct.
Of concern.
Our, okay. Because our area, our zoning, right. is not under Title 25. It's under our own ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It gets kind of, a little bit dangerous to for a property owner to own some land and lease it out to other people, and then they come on and make the regulations, the laws, and Attorney General.
Go up to Dover and make that argument tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I can see the other side on this thing. Could be, it's not, I mean, they act like the this owner has no money except the streets and sewer and anything else has been put in. And then Lisa, I think, well, we're going to pay what we want to. We'll make our own laws and rules. They should have known that when they went on private property, that they lease property. Should. I hear this all the time. I hear both sides. So.
Pass that paper down there right there, hitting you there, so we can see what's in that paper.
Hopefully, after the hearing tomorrow, you'll have more information
yes.
on this and can bring that back to us next week.
Mm-hmm.
Working in the legislature is a learning process.
And understand exactly what is in the
right.
Title 6, Chapter 25.
Well, I guess we ought to just, Mike, probably do this weekly, right? Like, pretty much weekly. As
yeah,
as
we're
between now and June 30th, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Because we're beyond the halfway point now with
right.
this year, and the legislature will be rather intense from now to the end of June. So I will try to keep you briefed on a weekly basis as to how things change and what's going on. And each time there's a hearing or a meeting, I'll learn more about the genesis of these bills that we're watching and their real intent.
All right, here it says on the, when we go back to that clergy thing, Mike, it says here, $30 registration fee. Why don't we, if there's any objection to that, why don't we just say we object to the fee structure and that the fee structure should be per county, you know, decision.
Delegated to the county's authority.
Yeah, I guess that's the only thing I could. I guess then we could talk about if $30 is too much, not enough, or whatever.
I am going to ask George Parrish also to keep me in the loop earlier in these.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
If he has other initiatives.
It says even $60 annual registration fee, and then it says something about $30. So, yeah, we would just any reference to registration fees
right.
would be on a per county basis.
Right.
Okay.
That sounds like recertification, doesn't it? The minister married you last year, and he can't got to come back up and take him up again.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. They have an annual fee.
Marry someone else.
Well, you got to get your car renewed
That's
every
right.
once in a while.
That's right. Like paramedics, they got to be never. You got to keep up speed.
Hey, Sam, you may have been kicked out of the church.
That would be good.
On the last page, Senate Bill.
Send a notice and just do it the other way.
Okay, Mr. Coppin.
On the last page, Senate Bill 208 is another animal control bill that's gotten my attention. I'll just read you a briefing that I've taken from the synopsis. This bill includes cats in the list of domestic animals, which when attacked might cause a dog to be declared a potentially dangerous dog, or if severely injured or killed might cause a dog to be declared a dangerous dog. This attack, serious injury or death, must occur on the property of the owner of the domestic animal or while under the immediate control of the owner of the domestic animal. The reason that I am concerned about this bill, while it hasn't moved very far yet,
Good.
Is that it will become part of the state animal code. One second.
That means if some cat runs across my property and gets involved with a dog fight, could.
Well, as you know, the state has given us the responsibility for licensing and to some degree managing these dogs, and in state code, the part that they're amending to add this cat in, if you read the next section or two beyond, goes to seizure and impoundment of dangerous or potentially dangerous dogs notification of dog owner request for hearing. So it sounds like it's getting pretty complicated. And now they're adding in your cat. So if a cat gets attacked by a dog, now the dog's owner is going to wind up in front of this group for a hearing. And they're referring to a dog warden shall seize and impound a dog suspected of being dangerous or potentially dangerous when the warden has reasonably cause to believe that the dog, it goes down through a list of things that the dog may have done, killed or inflicted serious physical injury upon a domestic animal, provided the domestic animal is on the property. So I'm worried that this is the state reaching into things that they're requiring us to do. So I'm watching this carefully because it sounds like this bill could just continue to add to our workload on what they've already given us with this dog licensing.
So they've just discovered that dogs will chase a cat.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they just discovered it or not. If they did, they're a little late on the uptake.
But
they're making this now something we're going to have to manage.
The consensus should be we leave cats out of the mix.
Well, I'm just concerned. I'm watching this carefully because I'm concerned they're going to add more cost on our process.
One consensus right here in this seat, in this chair.
If you read through the Delaware Code, you'll see why I'm concerned, because it one connects to the other.
There's two kind of cats now. We got a domestic, and then we got a stray cat here. So which one's this going to be? Both of them?
Finally, I wanted to discuss with you a conversation I had with Representative Dan Short a few days ago concerning House Bill 194 and the amendment that we discussed last week. We asked for an amendment to this bill. Should it pass or become active on the House floor, we wanted to make sure that Sussex County participated in this redevelopment committee that was established in the bill, to refresh your memory. The way Representative Short worded it was identical to the way Wilmington's amendment was worded, giving our president of council, such as their mayor, the opportunity to appoint two people to the redevelopment committee, and our vice president, as the president of city council, Ken in Wilmington, appoint one member of this committee. So he just worded it like that to mirror us into the amendment. With discussion last week, you asked me to ask him to change that wording to appoint those three members by approval of Sussex County Council. So the five of you would consider that. I brought that up to him, and he sort of wiped his brow and said, well, I'm not sure this bill is going to get worked. And secondly, if it does, this amendment that I've offered, being the one we just discussed, is going to meet severe resistance, I'm sure, because some folks have already told me that my amendment isn't going to get added. It's going to be quite difficult for me to get the amendment added to the bill. So he said, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to go back and reword it now. I don't want to tinker with it because that may cause more trouble than we already have with this bill. So what he asked me to suggest to you was that if you'd like that procedural change, and if the bill is passed at some point in the future and our amendment is added, could you five folks make those choices internally with it worded the way it is? In other words, could you make it a policy among yourselves to come up with three appointees and the five of you discuss and vote on that?
We could, although I think the change actually would give the bill a little greater opportunity of passage. I don't like that, invest that much authority into a single individual, even if they are the council president or the mayor of Wilmington. I think it does need to be a collective body's decision. Just for what it's worth, I think it may actually help the bill's potential of passage if that change was made now.
What I can do is, if when the bill is worked, I'll make every attempt to be there on the floor and interject your thoughts. But Dan wasn't agreeable to try and change the amendment now, was the response I got back from him.
Well, he probably has a good feel of what's going on up there, but I think Vance has got a good point. So I guess, you know, go up there and play it by ear.
If the time comes that our amendment's being discussed on the floor, I'll be sure to interject.
Relay our message to the body.
That this council would really prefer to choose these people by the council rather than by an individual, like you said.
Right.
And that concludes my legislative update.
Thank you, sir.
I did have one question.
Yes, sir.
Senate Bill 167, the exemption of taxes for Habitat of Humanity,
yes,
the other organizations. I noticed in the bill itself, that's kind of tagged in with a paragraph that includes other entities that are exempt from taxes. I'm just a little curious about what all those entities are. How many groups are being exempted from taxes, and then how much does that shift over to the general taxpayers? Maybe something you need to come back with us.
We'll do.
And when I read here that they're exempt from taxes, I assume that's
property taxes.
How about real estate transfer tax?
It didn't mention that. It just mentioned. I should have given you a copy.
Taxation.
It just mentioned property taxes.
Okay. Yep. And we do have the list of all the different agencies that are currently exempt, and it's roughly a page and a half already of specific nonprofits that are exempt. And what this is adding to it would be Habitat for Humanity of Newcastle County, Central Delaware Habitat for Humanity, and Sussex County Habitat for Humanity.
Okay.
Those would be the only ones that would be added to the current list.
That list, is that generated by us?
Transfer?
No.
This is state code.
State code list, okay.
How about would realty transfer tax be exempt on those, or just property tax?
I'll bet they're exempt from all taxes.
It says taxation by local government, so I suppose
it's taxation and assessment.
Yeah.
By local, that's everything.
I mean, doesn't it make sense that the local jurisdiction decides what they exempt from taxation? It's starting to transfer quite a bit burden onto, you know, your average working family.
So I don't have Title 305401 in front of me, and that is the one that addresses the transfer tax. But my recollection is certain nonprofits are exempt from transfer taxes anyway. So irregardless of this statute, that would already, I believe, be exempt. This only addresses the assessment and taxation during the period they own it. Mm-hmm. And for example, we recently have been working on, we have an MOU with Habitat where they're buying certain homes or some monies that the county has made available for them, and then they turn around in a year's time and sell. And in those documents, to go to one point that was made earlier, those mortgages state 1 year is the limit that they have the monies and go ahead and sell the property. But obviously, if they're building something on someone else's property, then they don't own it, it's not exempt. But if they own the lot, they're building the home, during that period it's being constructed, according to this, they would be exempt from our county taxation.
Well, it certainly feels good to exempt these organizations one after another until we have a page and a half of exempt organizations, but there are consequences to those actions that people may not consider. It probably is too great a task for our staff, but I'd be curious to know how much tax money is lost collectively from all these exemptions.
And I think we could find
you know
that
where
out.
Does it you can
I think
okay
so.
Might
take
be worth
a
looking
stab at it.
I mean, we're having a very hard time keeping our paramedic department properly funded. I don't think we're going to exempt these properties from paramedic service, so just where does it stop?
My question is, what triggers the putting them back on the rolls? How is that not forgotten? Because they have another settlement?
No, because yes, there's another settlement, right. Okay. And a new person owns the property, and so it would no longer be owned by Habitat.
Right.
It would be the person that they sell.
Well,
the
I get that,
to.
But whose responsibility is to physically put it on the rolls?
Assessment so department would put it on the rolls from they get the new deed, and
new deed.
Then they
okay.
put it on the tax roll.
Right.
It very well may be that this body would agree. But this body ought to have that authority to make the decision, because it's us that has to allocate the ultimate resources to the various departments that we manage.
I couldn't agree more.
So it's something to consider. Anything else for Mr. Godwin?
Just so it's on the record here, I had talked with Howe earlier. This year I have two appointments, one in planning and zoning and one in Board of Adjustment. And looking at those, which apparently are state laws, it says that no more than two members of those commissions can come to state the same representative district. Probably goes back a long, long time, and I've asked Mr. Godwin to have a bill introduced to change that from representative district to councilmatic district, which I think is what we are, council.
That's what I think it was intended, wasn't it, council?
That's what it says.
Mm-hmm. Probably just a housekeeping situation to change
it. Just so we all know
current wording in the law.
Talk about that.
Well, there should be anybody oppose it? consensus to do it?
The only thing I would question is that the current wording says two members from one representative district. I think we've operated under the, at least the thought that it was one member from each councilmatic mm-hmm. district. So if that is the consensus, maybe instead of two, it should say one, and instead of representative district, it should say councilmatic district.
Okay.
Is that fair?
That's a good idea, I think.
Because we don't want to leave Joan out. She might not have a council member.
Do you think there's ever a possibility that one of you may want to appoint someone, you may want to appoint someone that's outside your district?
Sure.
Is there that possibility?
Well, I think I could find somebody in my district.
Well, I understand, but I mean, I don't know. If there is that possibility, that two gives you the flexibility to move if you want to.
Stay with two.
Well, that's probably not as critical as changing the rep to the sure. council man at this time.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mr. Stewart.
Mr. Stewart.